start having me a ball. Cause I got a good feeling and I don't feel no pain at all. Right in my day.
Hey, Truth Seekers. Happy Friday. Happy February 29th. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. It is Friday night. We have not a whole lot of ground to cover like we do most nights, so we are going to be open to your comments this evening to a far greater degree than we are normally during the week. This news came in right before we went on the air here. Attorney General Michael Mukasey has decided not, he is refusing to refer the House's contempt citation against Bolton and Harriet Myers. Mukasey says no, he's not going to refer those contempt citations to a federal grand jury. Mukasey said Bolton and Harriet Myers committed no crime. Well, that's the end of that. They didn't commit a crime! As promised, though, Nancy Pelosi announced that she has given the Judiciary Committee authority to file a lawsuit against Bolton and Myers in federal court. However, Attorney General and ardent right-winger Michael Mukasey said Bolton and Myers acted properly in ignoring subpoenas to provide Congress with White House documents or to testify about the firings of federal prosecutors. There is no oversight with the legislative branch anymore. How could the House expect to exert its authority? That's gone. And one of the reasons it's gone is because of what the Democrats have done for the past 7 years. This is the part that drives me insane. How many times did you and I scream bloody murder when the Democrats, even when they were in the minority, refused to assert their prerogative as a co-equal branch of the U.S. government? How many times did they roll over and play dead for George Bush? Now, since the 2006 elections, how many times have they done it? So is there a surprise here that Mukasey and Bush are saying, oh, go screw yourself? What do you mean, subpoena? What are you talking about? Get out of town. So Pelosi now, all of a sudden, well, Pelosi said, quote, the American people demand that we uphold the law. Now listen to this. As public officials, we take an oath to uphold the Constitution and protect our system of checks and balances, and our civil lawsuit seeks to do just that, end quote. What? Oh, my God. So here's Pelosi. She said that. She said this. As public officials, she said it today. As public officials, we take an oath to uphold the Constitution. Oh, God, Madam Speaker, sit down and shut up. You have done nothing to uphold the Constitution since the 2006 elections, nor in the previous 5 years with this monstrous Bush crime family in power, and now you're going to say, oh, well, we're here to uphold the Constitution. No, you're not. You're not there to uphold the Constitution at all. You're there to roll over and do exactly what you are told to do. Not by Bush, but by the corporatists that now run the government. Because people like you, Speaker Pelosi, and your predecessors, and all the Democrats who have wallowed for the past 7 years in their ineffectiveness, you have brought this. You have brought it to this. Mukasey says they committed no crime.
There's not going to be any hearings. There's not going to be any indictments. There's not going to be any subpoenas. I say
they committed no crime. Thanks, Chuck Schumer. Now, who is the guy, the senator, who suggested Michael Mukasey? Bingo, a Democrat, Charles Schumer. A couple of weeks ago, when the House voted to cite both Bolton and Myers for contempt, contempt of Congress and try to get a grand jury investigation. If you remember, that's when, excuse me, the Republicans walked out. So the House vote to try to force Bolton and Harriet Myers into the rule of law, that vote passed 223-32. And it was the first type, first vote of its type, I think, in some time, a couple of decades or something, they said. But anyway, Pelosi requested the grand jury investigation yesterday. And she gave Attorney General McCasey a week to reply. And then she said that the House would file a civil suit seeking enforcement of the contempt citations if federal prosecutors declined to seek the misdemeanor charges against Bolton and Myers. And the plaintiffs in the suit will be the entire Judiciary Committee, who will be represented by the House's lawyers. McCasey only took a day to get back to her. See, the Republicans, you know, this is the thing. The Republicans, especially the key members of the Bush crime family, they realize what the Democrats have done. Do the Democrats not realize what they've done, or is this just all for show? Is this so that Nancy Pelosi is trying to, you know, stand up on her hind legs and pretend like, hey, I'm the Speaker. Hey, we have a co-equal branch of government. Hey, we were charged by the people of the United States to enforce the Constitution. By God, that's where we're going. Hey! And the Republicans and the Bush crime family look at this and they go, oh, my God, okay, we have to go through this little charade, okay. McCasey says they're not guilty. They're not guilty of anything. They've committed no crime. Shut up, Nancy. Just shut up. Okay, you got to do this? Okay, go ahead and do it. Go ahead and do it, Madam Speaker. Now, in the meantime, people like John Boehner, the former, what was he? Was he the Speaker? Yeah, John Boehner, he just sits back on his ass and just laughs and giggles and chuckles and orders another Jack Black and Diet Coke and just sits there and goes, Jesus Christ, look at these. Boehner and the Republicans were instrumental during the time they controlled the House in absolutely, thoroughly, completely, totally, and almost probably irrevocably destroying the function of at least the House version or the House section of the U.S. Congress. The Senate is pretty much dead, too. The Senate had a chance after chance after chance in the Bush crime family years to stop these nominations for the federal bench, for the Supreme Court, and in every single instance. Don't you remember? Of course you remember. See, Pelosi and Reid and the rest of these Democrats, in name only, understand something. You and I don't remember stuff. We don't remember anything. We don't remember 4 years ago and 3 years ago and 5 years ago and 6 years ago, all these nominations where the Democrats went along because they said, oh, well, we're not going to get into a spitting contest with, the terrorists attacked us. And we want to support President Bush. And, you know, we'll wait until there's an important issue. And then we'll stand up on our hind legs and say, hey, wait a minute. Oh, please. God, it's hard being a Democrat. It is so hard. But anyway, McCasey took a day to get back to her, and he joined his predecessor, Alberto Gonzalez, in telling these Democrats in the House that no contempt citation to prosecute. Nah, sit down. Shut up. Go back to what you were doing. Go pretend that you still represent the people, Speaker Pelosi. Just shut up. Now, I like this part. The Associated Press writer writes this. Though they were not surprised, Democrats reacted to McCasey's letter with outrage. Representative John Conyers, Judiciary Committee, said, quote, today's decision to shelve the contempt process in violation of a federal statute shows that the White House will go to any lengths to keep its role in the U.S. attorney firings hidden. In the face of such extraordinary actions, we have no choice but to proceed with a lawsuit to enforce the committee subpoenas, end quote. Oh, Representative Conyers, I mean, you two, what are you talking about? You people have rolled over so many times, you look like the Michelin tire boy. You really do. I mean, all of you Democrats in the House, you've brought it to this with your inactivity, your cowardice, your willingness to stand between the Constitution and this crime organization, and now You're going to bitch about it and push this rinky-dink issue about subpoenas? Whoa! You guys are so brave. You've really found your backbones. Whoa!
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Oh, and speaking of weirdness in the House and the Senate, Senator McCain issued a statement today saying that he doesn't agree with everything that the psychopathic Christian, fake Christian, Christ eater, John Hagee, who runs this 17,000 member Cornerstone Church down in Texas. Hagee wants to kill all the Jews who don't accept Hagee's Lord and Savior, Jesus H. Christ. And Hagee will pull a knife across their throats. That's a given. That's exactly what Hagee believes is to happen. Hagee also is completely anti-Catholic. It's one thing to be an atheist. It's something else again to come up with the most vile crap. There is enough history to show the murderous nature of the Catholic Church that you don't have to make stuff up. There is also an awful lot of compassion shown by individual Catholics. And there's a difference. Oh, my God, there's such a difference between followers of a faith sometimes and the organizers of that faith or the organization that claims to be that faith. There is a difference. I acknowledge that because I happen to be an atheist and I jump down the throats of these religious thugs on a basis that probably drives some of you people crazy. It's a little bit different than spouting anti-Jewish rhetoric or anti-Catholic rhetoric for no reason other than to build yourself up and tear them down, right? You never hear atheists doing that. I'm an atheist. You've got to clear your head like me. You just don't hear that. But Hagee endorsed this madman McCain at a news conference on Wednesday. And today, McCain issued a statement saying he said he had disagreements with John Hagee. He said in his statement, in no way, my friends, did I intend for his endorsement, my friends, to suggest that I in turn agree, my friends, with all of Pastor Hagee's views, which I obviously do not, my friends. Now, apparently for the past 2 days, Hagee and McCain are getting a lot of criticism from not just the Democratic National Committee, but also the Catholic League and Catholics United. And, of course, Hagee believes that the Catholic Church conspired with Nazis against the Jews. Now, you might be able to make an argument there. Was it Pope Pius X or the 12th who decided to remain silent in order to protect the Catholics in Germany? And besides, back then, this is before Vatican II, don't forget, the official position of the Catholic Church was that the Jews murdered their Lord and Savior, right? So I don't know. Maybe Hagee's on to something there. But he went on to say that Hurricane Katrina, remember, God's retribution for homosexual sin. And, he makes very demeaning comments, Hagee does, about women, but so do Orthodox Jews. when pressed. So do Muslims, Orthodox Muslims. Well, you know, why not these fundamentalist Christians? Most of the religions, the three religions of the book, are just totally anti-female anyway. Completely anti-female. And he also, Hagee, makes flip remarks about slavery. He's just a lard-ass, nasty, stinky-breathed, hateful, Christ-devouring, bloated old white man who has found a scam that gets him free travel to the Middle East and gives him a platform where he can spout his garbage and you know, gives him gold faucets in his bathroom or gold handles on his toilet. I don't know. He's just another Christ hustler. Just another one. There's so many of them. But anyway, McCain was pressed on the issue this morning in Texas, McCain said, Hagee, quote, supports what I stand for and believe in, end quote. He said that. But then he says, quote, when he endorses me, that does not mean that I endorse everything that he stands for and believes in. I don't have to agree with everyone who endorses my campaign, end quote. Somebody quick, send this back and forth to Tim Russert. So the next time, you know, he's got a sharp object up his butt, apparently, and he's facing Barack Obama, he doesn't start drilling Obama about Louis Farrakhan. Ah, you think? McCain added that he was, his word, proud of Hagee's spiritual leadership. This roly-poly, demon, blood-sucking, Christ-killing thug, and McCain says he's proud of Hagee's spiritual leadership. Hagee has spirituality? You're kidding! Does he really? Well, I'll be damned. And on top, now, you know, McCain really attracts nice people, doesn't he? This bad hair dye job talk show host in Cincinnati who kept referring to Barack Hussein Obama, Barack Hussein Obama, Barack Hussein Obama. Now, granted, McCain kind of cut that freak loose a lot quicker than he cut Hagee loose. But, you know, how many people follow Cunningham versus how many people believe that John Hagee has the word? We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy, Nova M.
Have you prayed for a way to forgive your latest enemy? Well, then do not do it in my name. Yeah, don't blame it on me. Yeah, please don't do it.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour. McCain really attracts him. This is the thing about the Republican Party. The Democratic Party has pretty much purged itself, not only of real liberals, but also of those fringe crazy people. I don't know who they would be. I'm sure we had them at one point. But the Democratic Party has purged itself of true liberals and, for the most part, true progressives. And what is left is this kind of hybrid of centrist, don't disturb anything, get along and go along, and... you know, pull the covers up to your chin at night and just hope everything will be okay when you wake up in the morning kind of Democrat, whereas the Republicans haven't done that. They still encompass everything from the skinheads to the neo-Nazis to the religious crazies to so-called social conservatives to so-called economic conservatives to people like Ron Paul who are really libertarian. They have this mishmash. You talk about the big tent. The Republican Party is the big tent. Now, you have to have a certain level of insanity in order to enter the big top, though. You really do. And you either have to be a clown or a juggler, or some kind of maybe a freak. You know, maybe you were born with scales on your back and a huge fin or a long slithery tail. But you know, welcome to the big top. Hey, step right up. Hiya, hiya, come on in. It's good to see you here at the Republican Party. Amen, amen. Give me a Jew to kill and a Catholic to bastardize. I am the Reverend James Hagee, and I'm going to endorse. Let me see, eeny, meeny, miny, mo. No, I can't go for the big O. I can't go for Hillary Clinton. I know John McCain. They're crazy. They're crazy. They're totally freaking crazy. And the Democrats? We could probably use some crazy. But no, you know, I'm probably the most extreme nutball on the air that claims to be a Democrat or a liberal or a progressive. The rest of them are just too laid back, huh? All the other progressive talk shows. Well, let's take a look at this now. Let's see. No, thank you. I've got to touch on this. I blogged about it today at MikeMolloy.com. Or, Kathy, you blogged about it. You wrote about it, didn't you? Yeah, okay. We take turns. Do you all know what heparin is? It's a blood thinner. I was married to a woman one time who had an infection, and she started throwing blood clots into her lungs and came within inches of dying, and she was only in her late 20s. And they used heparin to thin her blood, so to speak. It doesn't really thin your blood. It just kind of cancels the coagulating factor that's present in your blood. You know, your body doesn't want to bleed to death. So there are, when you cut yourself or otherwise open up a vein or whatever, there are factors that go into play. Well, heparin prevents that. Now, heparin is good for people who are on IVs because there is a tendency to start to clot around where the IV goes in. There is a reason to use it when you're getting a dialysis, when you have open heart surgery, when you have bypass surgery. There are so many reasons to use heparin, the so-called blood thinner. All of a sudden, Americans are dying from the use of heparin. American investigators are trying to determine why. Well, here's a clue. The raw material for the drug, this is 2 days in a row, today and yesterday, New York Times front page, the raw materials for the drug, and by the way, it's made from the mucus inside pig intestines. For all you people who want to live a kosher life, woo, be aware of that. Anyway, it's made from the mucus membranes inside pig intestines. That's where you get the elemental basis for heparin. So it's coming from China. Apparently China provides raw heparin to a company in the United States that is responsible for about 70%. It's called Baxter International, about 70% of the heparin used in this country. Oh, God, China. Is there anything that the Chinese do that isn't full of disease and death and lies and fraud and misrepresentation and destruction? Anything? Of course, is there anything that the regulatory agencies in the United States that are supposed to protect us from this sort of thing, is there anything they do to stop it? The first answer is no. The second answer is hell no. So investigators from the United States and China are examining the records of a factory that supplies much of the pig guts that goes into heparin for Baxter International. Now, Baxter International, as the Times reports earlier this month, halted sales of multi-dose vials of heparin after reports of injuries and deaths. Multi-dose vials. Okay, not single-dose vials, but multi-dose vials. Now, the owner of the factory in China, the factory is known as Shangzhou SPL. They say, no, our supply chain is safe. The president of Scientific Protein Laboratories, that's an American company that owns the majority of Shangzhou SPL. This guy, David Strunt, says, we have a collection chain in place, and we stick with that. But he declined several requests from the New York Times to identify the smaller suppliers. He said, no, proprietary information, just like Diebold does. Okay? But interviews with dozens of heparin producers and traders in several Chinese provinces that the New York Times writers conducted, as well as a visit that they made to a village in China that is dominated by these tiny little family workshops. Now, the tiny little family workshops, they are these little houses that, oh God, I can't describe it. In the New York Times yesterday, there was a picture inside the kitchen of one of these little houses that is referred to as a family workshop. And the place is filthy. Paint is peeling off of everything. The people doing the work there have no hairnets, no lab coats, no gowns, no gloves, and they are laying out pig guts, and then they scrape the pig guts into something, a container that may have earlier held orange paint because they also had a contract to produce orange candy for American children. So they decided, what are we going to use? We don't have any oranges. They said, well, use orange paint. You know, it's just going to America. They don't know. So now they're using it to collect pig guts, the stuff you scrape off the inside of the pig guts. Now, there's a problem here because the Chinese heparin market has become unsettled over the last year. Why? Because a hideous pig disease has swept through China. And what that's done, it's made so many pigs have had to be slaughtered. It's called blue ear or pink ear or yellow ear or whatever the hell disease it's called. I don't know. But it makes pigs, like, toxic, really poisonous, more so than they already are. I don't know why anyone eats pork anyway. Wait a minute, what am I talking about? I eat bacon. Oh, forget it. But anyway, this pig disease has ripped through the country, which has depleted the stocks of pigs. So how did the Chinese react to that? Well, they sell their sick pigs to the market before the few government, the Chinese government inspectors show up. Here's 50 pigs. Normally they're $100 a piece or 100 yuan a piece. I'll give them to you for 10 yuan. Just get them out of here. Get them, take them. Of course, now the pigs are, you know, they're downer pigs. Is there such a thing as a downer pig? But there they are. So where do they go? They go into these villages, and then they go into these little individual houses, into these little individual kitchens, where after they're slaughtered, they take the guts out, they take the intestines out, they lay them out on the kitchen countertop, along with the orange paint and whatever disease happens to be there, and they start scraping the inside of the guts to get the mucous membranes out, which will then wind up as heparin, going into the arm of somebody in this country getting kidney dialysis. Huh? How about that? Oh, my God. Now, these deaths and injuries were first reported last month showing up in Missouri. Now, I like this. Like many chemical companies in China that make pharmaceutical ingredients for export to us, SPL, fell into a regulatory void. A spokesman for China's State Food and Drug Administration, that sounds real effective, doesn't it? China's State Food and Drug Administration, a spokesman said his agency had not inspected the SPL factory because, quote, as far as we know, it is not a drug manufacturer. It's a producer of chemical ingredients, end quote. See how that works? That son of a bitch ought to go to work for George Bush. No, we didn't inspect it. We didn't inspect it because, you know, they don't manufacture drugs there. What's heparin? Oh, that's pig guts. But it's not a drug. It's a chemical ingredient. You still with me? Probably not. Kathy, I think we lost 80% of our audience with this story. But we'll come back and finish it up right after this break anyway. Pig guts. I didn't know that. Heparin. I had no idea. The mucous membranes off the insides of pig intestines. Oh, well, that's. Morrissey was dialing up his buddy at the old pet store. I said, not today, I lost my appetite. There's two cats in my belly and they want to fight. I was sucking on a rolling in a Tums or two. Well, I swear I heard it, new boy. And that is when I knew. There's a cat in the kettle at the peaking moon. I think I gotta stop eating there at noon. They say that it's beef or fish or pork, but it's purring there on my fork. There's a hairball.
in the dirt. And for all the little...
The Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
Ten before the hour. Once again, the process of making heparin, this blood thinner, this... I don't know why I have to keep saying this. I just don't want you to think that I believe it thins your blood. It doesn't. But it counteracts the natural occurring coagulating agent in the blood. Anyway, the process of making heparin, for those of you who missed the first part of the show, begins with the intestines of slaughtered pigs, from which mucous membrane is collected and cooked. And eventually it produces a dry substance known as crude heparin. Now, major heparin producers like this company we're talking about, SPL, that is pretty much run by Americans, take that substance, the crude heparin, refine it and sell it to companies like Baxter, the company that produces, I believe, distributes about 70% of the heparin in the United States. And Baxter Chemicals then makes the final product, which is widely used in dialysis and cardiovascular surgery and anything to offset blood clots. Consequently, it must be used for people who have strokes, right, Kathy? So some experts say that as much as 70% of China's crude heparin, the pig gut stuff, for domestic use and for export, comes from small factories in poor villages. Now, remember, these factories... are fed by these little kitchen chemical labs that are nothing more than these filthy dung holes where it's just reeking of pig disease and human disease and oh God, just, I mean, swine flu. I don't know, just everything. It just, can you imagine if somebody walked in, you ought to see the picture in the New York Times. If somebody walked in there with a sterile swab and just wiped it across any surface inside this little home lab laboratory, just wipe it across any surface, then smear it on a nice culture in a Petri dish and stand back. Probably 15 minutes later, the entire kitchen would just be rah, full of some enormous, out-of-control thing growing out of the Petri dish, right? But that's okay. In a village called Jinwangzhuang, nearly every house along a narrow street, according to the New York Times, doubles as a tiny heparin operation, where teams of 4 to 8 women wearing aprons and white boots. Ooh. For some reason, I just flashed on Nancy Sinatra. They wash, splice, separate, and process pig intestines into sausage casings and heparin. God. Okay. No. I'm sure it's fine. According to the Times, the floors in these places had large puddles and drainage channels. The workshops, quote, were dilapidated and unheated, and steam from the production process fogged up the windows and soaked the walls. There were large ovens to cook ingredients and halls lined with barrels to store enzymes, rosins, intestines, and wastewater. It just sounds lovely, doesn't it? Zhu Jinlan, the owner of one heparin operation, who stopped sorting pig intestines and invited visitors, that would be the New York Times reporters, to a back room where she lives with her husband and child, said, "This is our family-style workshop. We've been doing this for about 10 years. Oh. After an outbreak of blue ear pig disease swept through 25 of China's 31 provinces and regions last year, prices soared, and many drug suppliers had to look to the small workshops. The epidemic, said a heparin expert at the Shandong University School of Medicine, the epidemic, quote, made those biotech companies inevitably purchase from family-style plants for cheaper prices. Family-style plants. Now, in closing... The FDA, our FDA, emphasized that it had yet to identify the root cause of the problem. And that it had not yet concluded that, you know, the Chinese operation was responsible. We just, you know. The FDA, however, admitted that it had violated its own policy by failing to inspect the SPL pharmaceutical company located west of Shanghai. Before the factory began shipping the heparin ingredient to Baxter Pharmaceuticals in the United States in 2004, and China's drug agency also did not inspect the plant. You know, when I read stuff like that, I also, not only do I flash on Nancy Sinatra, but I also flash on Ron Paul. You know, the guy who presents himself as the answer to everything, and so many people who are either blinded or dumber than hell who have supported him. And I think to myself, what would Ron Paul do about this situation? And the answer very quickly is absolutely and utterly nothing. In fact, by the time this story would have broken, a Ron Paul administration would have gone ahead and completed the work of George Bush and destroyed organizations or agencies like the FDA. And yet some of you people are still insisting, Ron Paul, he's the answer. Ron Paul, that's our boy. No, he's not. But this story is just, Madeline writes in, she says, I guess it is okay with the corporate pharmaceutical criminals in Washington to import drugs from China that will kill you. But it was too dangerous to buy safe drugs from Canada a few years ago. Yeah, remember that? Old folks in this country, or maybe not so old, people on limited incomes who wanted to buy Canadian pharmaceuticals that came from Canadian companies. I don't know if they import pig guts from China, but no, can't do that. And what was the reason? The regulator said, well, they might be contaminated from Canada. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Now, I wasn't going to bring this up, but I guess I was kind of waffling on whether or not to bring it up, but so I've decided to bring it up, and that is this cowardly little pig bastard, since we're talking about pigs, Matt Drudge. Was it yesterday the British discovered that Prince Harry, third in line to the crown, has been with his unit fighting in Afghanistan since before Christmas. Now, the national press in the UK, which is notorious for not keeping a secret, and the global press that was in on this, swore to utmost secrecy, which allowed them to be in Afghanistan, to take the videos that we've all seen now, and report on Harry, not for publication, but to wait until he had left the country. He has been serving as a forward air controller on the front lines in Helmand province in the south of the country. He's been guiding airstrikes on Taliban targets in conjunction with the U.S. Air Force and the British Royal Air Force and other coalition forces. And for nearly 3 months, this was the best-kept secret in journalism. Apart, of course, from all the others that we don't know about. But in return for interviews and access to Harry before and during his tour of active duty, the Brits and foreign media outlets agreed to impose a complete news blackout until he'd returned from active service. So this little toilet bowl floater Matt Drudge, who is just, you know, sometimes people will send me links to a story that you think I might be interested in, and it's go to Drudge. And, I would smash my computer into a million pieces before I would go to this filthy pig's website. And I'll tell you what, I had the thought today, after following this story for the past 24 hours, that Prince Harry ought to, when he gets back to the UK, he ought to ask for a leave. He ought to come over here and go to Matt Drudge's hovel, his rat hole, and drag this little cowardly son of a bitch out into the street and beat him to a bloody pulp. Prince Harry was there because of, for reasons that Matt Drudge would never understand if Matt Drudge lived to be 1,000. In Harry's mind, it was patriotic, but beyond patriotic, he was there with his mates, people that he'd gone to Sanders. Did he go to Sanders? I think it was Sanders. People that he'd graduated from military college with. People with whom he felt a sense of connection, a sense of camaraderie, the kind of thing that this pig, scum-sucking Matt Drudge would never understand if he lived, like I said, if he lived to be 1,000, because Matt Drudge is a typical bottom-feeding Republican coward. He sucks up the stuff that other people discard. Now, it wasn't Matt Drudge who broke the story, although he's just wallowing in the credit. It was a weekly Australian news magazine with a population of with a circulation of maybe 20 that broke the story. And Drudge, being the bottom-feeding toilet bowl floater that he is, picked that up and exposed it to the world, putting this guy at risk. Now, let's all make the case that Prince Harry shouldn't be in Afghanistan to begin with. Okay, let's all make the case that Prince Harry's life is no different from any other soldier's life or Afghan civilian's life who is being bombed and straight. Okay, fair enough. That's not the issue here for me. The issue is that some piece of human waste like Matt Drudge feels it's okay, you see, to expose a guy who arguably would be a much higher value target than, say, Matt Drudge if he were in Afghanistan. God, I hate this guy. But I would love to see, since Harry has been acting as a forward air controller, setting up or guiding airstrikes, I think he ought to get the coordinates on wherever Matt Drudge is. Easy enough to find. I'm sure Matt Drudge carries every conceivable kind of electronic a telephone device. Get a fix on him. Send one of those Hellfire missiles from one of those drone airplanes that we love to slam into Afghan wedding parties. And I really do. I think Harry ought to do this. I think MI5 ought to dye his red hair brown, change his manner of dress, make him slouch, get rid of the military bearing, make him walk like somebody like Sean Hannity or Matt Drudge, you know, just kind of slough along with his ass dragging on the ground, and send him over here and get the coordinates, and then have an RAF plane or an unmanned drone fly overhead, and then Prince Harry can say, "All right, here it is, here's the coordinates." Another piece of scum flicked off the skin of the planet. Oh, I hate these people. God, they are useless. The thing that bothers me, I don't know what ABC, I don't think ABC mentioned the Drudge site, but NBC did. Brian Williams last night said, covered on the Matt Drudge site. Which gives us, this is like putting Matt Drudge on television so he can publicly masturbate. This is the kind of stuff that Matt Drudge eats, drinks. Oh, I got on to NBC News. Holy Christ. Okay, calm down. Prairie 2 said, "Hey, Mike, if we lived in America, the Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, would be having the Judiciary Committee drawing up impeachment on the Attorney General." for his failure to enforce their lawful contempt citation. That's true. I mean, where this chain of illegality and unlawfulness and criminality, I mean, it's a circle. You know, from Cheney to Bush to the Attorney General to the leaders, the Republican leaders in the House and the Senate, and someplace in there, of course, Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi. But it's just this chain of criminality and cowardice. Circle of criminality and cowardice. Aren't you sick of it? Aren't you sick of it? Now, Barack Obama. This is from... I'm sure you know who Jeremy Scahill is. This is from The Nation, the March 17th issue. Just a couple of quotes here. excuse me. Hillary Clinton's staff released a statement announcing that Senator Clinton is now co-sponsoring legislation to, quote, ban the use of Blackwater and other private mercenary firms in Iraq, end quote. The statement from the Clinton campaign says, quote, the time to show these contractors the door is long past due, end quote. Now, as Scahill says, her timing was interesting to say the least. Why not, why February 28th, yesterday, in the middle of a tough political campaign? Why not after last September's Nisour Square massacre when Blackwater operatives killed 17 Iraqi citizens, or better, before that slaughter? Regardless, Scahill writes, this makes Clinton the most significant U.S. political figure to date to issue such a call. Now, he then goes on to talk about... Barack Obama, and a senior foreign policy advisor to Obama, told The Nation that if he's elected, Obama will not, quote, rule out, end quote, using private security companies like Blackwater worldwide in Iraq. This advisor also told The Nation that Barack Obama does not plan to sign onto legislation that seeks to ban the use of these forces in U.S. war zones by January 2009, when a new president will be sworn in. Obama's campaign says that instead... he, Obama, will focus on bringing accountability to these forces while increasing funding for the State Department's Bureau of Diplomatic Security, the agency that employs Blackwater and other private security contractors. Uh-oh. Are you listening, Obama supporters? Our candidate by default, at least in my case, says he will continue to fund the division of the State Department, increase funding. So there's more money to hire outfits like Blackwater to go into places like Iraq, Afghanistan, where else? Syria? Where else? Jordan, maybe? Lebanon? And commit murder. These are not military. There's more. Oh, stay here. Stay here. You got to hear this. We're talking about Barack Obama.
The primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour, and I said we were going to get to calls tonight. Oh, well, we'll get there. Anyway, back to Jeremy Scahill writing in the March 17th issue of The Nation about Barack Obama's position on using mercenaries. Obama's spokesman has said, if elected, Obama will not rule out using private security companies like Blackwater in Iraq, and that leaves open the question, where else would you use them, President Obama? Also, the advisor said that Obama does not plan to sign on to legislation that seeks to ban the use of these forces in U.S. war zones. Hillary Clinton says she will. Beyond that, Barack Obama's broader Iraq withdrawal plan provides for some U.S. troops to remain in Iraq, how many his advisors won't say, but it's clear that a President Obama's so-called follow-on force will include a robust security force to protect U.S. personnel in Iraq and U.S. trainers for Iraqi forces and military units to, quote, strike at al-Qaeda, end quote. So where are those forces to come from? Bingo! The senior advisor to the Barack campaign, who wished to remain unnamed, told Jeremy Scahill at The Nation, quote, if Barack Obama comes into office next January and our diplomatic security service is in the state it's in and the situation on the ground in Iraq is in the state it's in, I think we will be forced to rely on a host of security measures. I won't rule out private security contractors. I will rule out, the advisor added, private security contractors that are not accountable to U.S. law. End quote. But there's a problem with that last little bit. The U.S. embassy in Iraq is slated to become the largest embassy in world history. If Barack Obama maintains that embassy and its army of diplomats and U.S. personnel going in and out of the green zone, which his advisors say he will, then a significant armed force will be required just for protection. The force that now plays that role is composed almost exclusively of, no, not U.S. Marines. That's the way it used to be. Now, it's contractors from Blackwater, DynCorp, and Triple Canopy. These are all companies that have fielded private armies. Blackwater, of course, was the one that marched into New Orleans and, relieved people of their personal weapons. Now, the Obama campaign and the Obama Senate staffers, say both his staffers in the Senate and his campaign people, say, or they characterize this as an inherited problem. In other words, well, you know, we didn't set it up where there would be private contractors, and therefore there's no good alternatives. The senior advisor says to Jeremy Scahill at The Nation, quote, we are in a situation where, because of bad planning and a series of disastrous policy choices by the Bush administration, we're forced to rely on private security contractors. What we're focused on at the moment is getting the legal architecture in place that will hold these guys accountable to the same standard that applies to enlisted U.S. military personnel, end quote. I'm sorry. I'm just a talk show host, but you've got to be goddamn kidding. What applies to U.S. military personnel is the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And that only applies to people who are sworn members of the U.S. military, not private contractors, Senator Obama. And by the way, if you didn't know, and I'm sure you do, in Iraq right now, the number of private contractors is basically the same as the number of U.S. troops, 130 to 140,000. Now, excuse me. Not all of those private contractors are carrying weapons and shooting up the countryside and the residents. Some of them are doing things like scrubbing toilets and serving food. That used to be a military operation also, until the Bush crime family, until Donald Rumsfeld destroyed the military. And as Scahill writes, the private security industry knows well that it has become a central part of U.S. policy in Iraq and Afghanistan. Extricating these firms from this position will require a major and aggressive undertaking with significant congressional support, which is by no means guaranteed. In fact, Blackwater appears to see a silver lining in the prospect of U.S. forces being withdrawn or reduced in Iraq. Joseph Schmitz, chief operating officer of Blackwater's parent company, the Prince Group, said, quote, there is a scenario where we could, as a government, the United States, we could pull back the military footprint and there would then be more of a need for private contractors to go in, end quote. Oh, and the Obama senior advisor talking to Jeremy Scahill at The Nation says that statement is, quote, an unfortunate characterization End quote.
With their fingers crossed, everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lies.
You know, I take great comfort in knowing that they don't know what they're talking about, because history takes a long time for it to reach. And there's no such thing as short-term history.
I was born with the gift of a golden voice.
Liberation Poet writes in regarding U.S. troops in Iraq. The question is, who would leave a more broad presence of U.S. personnel in Iraq? Barack or Hillary? Well, that's certainly an issue to consider when casting our votes. Actually, we don't have that much to say about it, at least not in this state. If you've not had a primary in your state yet, if you live in Ohio or Texas, wherever you live, you know, you still have a chance to influence the selection process. I have no doubt that come November, I've said this before, I'm going to once again commit treason against my own belief system and vote for whoever the Democratic nominee is. I simply have to. I just have to. And it used to be, well, I'd hold my nose and vote. And then it became, well, all right, I'll vote for the lesser of two evils. Now it is a form of personal treason. But what is my choice? Prairie 2 writes, Prince Harry wasn't with his unit. He was assigned to a Gurkha's regiment. Recruited from Nepal for the last 200 years, they are, pound for pound, the toughest soldiers in the world. They like to work with knives. Turn Drudge over to a couple of these guys after what he did to their prince. Yeah, absolutely. What a piece of human waste. I can imagine, you know, I watched the videos that are now out there before Prince Harry knew his cover was blown, videos that he gave willingly to ITN and to, who else would it be? BBC, perhaps, various news organizations that sent film crews over to record the fact that, for whatever reason, you know, let's all get all our panties in a wad about the NATO presence in Afghanistan. Okay. But for whatever reason, here is a member of the royal family who, by tradition, I'm not saying Harry is unique. One of the other royals was in the Falklands War, right? Okay. But I'm just saying, when you volunteer yourself to go to a war zone, you're saying something. Now, some people are saying, I'm a sadistic son of a bitch and I want to go kill as many civilians as I possibly can. And this way I can do it legally. Or some say, I'm an imperialist bastard, and I want to go stamp the footprint of the UK or the US on this poor little third world mountainous country. Okay, you can do that too. Or you can say, okay, I was sent to a military a prep school, one of the finest on the planet. I've got a unit that I trained with. They're going to Afghanistan. I can't because I am a member of the royal family. This is nonsense. Now, you can also call that dedication to your unit, dedication to what you've been trained to do, perhaps pride in military. And may I remind you, there is really nothing wrong in pride of military. The shame comes from the misuse of the military, either as a whole or individual acts of madness because of repeated forced deployments into a war zone, or because the screening process that used to be so tight that people who had traffic violations were denied entry until they could be checked out. That's all gone now, thanks to Donald Rumsfeld. So you can look at Harry's deployment any way you choose. But I do know this from listening to those videos. He was damn proud to be there. He was relieved to be there. He felt he was doing the proper thing in being there. And then some piece of human squeeze mess like Matt Drudge outs him to the world, and he has to go home. I would not be surprised. Of course, Prince Harry, I'm sure, has proper breeding. He's a gentleman, whereas Matt Drudge is something you scrape off your foot before you enter your house. But I'm sure that Prince Harry has had the passing thought, oh, I think I'll go kill the bastard. You think? Oh, I'm just projecting. I'm just putting myself in the place of Prince Harry. Oh, stop, Mike. Have you seen the new Clinton advertisement, Protect the Kids? Kind of a tamped-down version of the one LBJ ran against Barry Goldwater back in the 1964 contest. It only ran, by the way, one time. And I swear to you, on all things holy, I was living in Savannah, Georgia at the time, in 1964, and I saw that ad. The little girl picking the blossoms off of a daisy or a flower, counting in a little kid kind of way, and then the camera zooms in as she's picked all the petals off. The camera zooms in to the cornea of her eye and keeps going deeper, and then you hear this male voice counting down from 10, and then the nuclear explosion. And then you hear LBJ's voice about how important it is to vote Democratic on November 3rd, 1964. One time that ran. Once. Now, you can see it on YouTube or any place you want to, but it ran on national television once. Hillary Clinton's ad with the ringing ringing telephone. Have you noticed it takes six rings for her to answer? The ringing telephone with the sleeping children. Let me quote something from Bill Clinton, who was campaigning for John Kerry in 2004. This is what Bill Clinton said. One of Clinton's laws of politics is, if one candidate is trying to scare you and the other one is trying to make you think, if one candidate's appealing to your fears and the other one's appealing to your hopes, you better vote for the person who wants you to think and hope. End quote. That's from Bill Clinton. Well, I'm getting so pissed off. I find out that Barack Obama supports Blackwater and mercenary troops to go commit mayhem and war when, you know, we've said it so many times on this program, if we are still at the point where war is a viable option, which it should not have been after the invention of gunpowder, but if we are still there, and obviously we are, then the military has got to come from the general population. It's got to be universal. It's got to be like the Israelis do it. Every single man and woman, when they reach a certain age, is eligible for the draft and must take military training. Period. End of story. Now, in the United States, if that were applied very quickly, we would find our pacifist center and stop it. But that's not what we're doing. We're relying on people to fill the ranks of the military who are either misled about why they're going. I'm not saying they all are. There are some people who are joining the military, in the United States military, because they truly feel a sense of dedication to the traditions of the military, to what they see as protecting this nation, as misguided as that is. We've not needed protection since the invention of nuclear weapons. Come on. Everybody knows that. Our wars since the end of World War II have been wars of opportunity to benefit corporate interests. Come on. You know that. You know that in your heart. Now, that doesn't mean that every single man or woman who has joined the military or has gone to combat has willingly done so in order to support corporate America. It's amazing what can get into the heads, the minds, the soul, the consciousness of young people. when they are inculcated with what you are inculcated with in military training. But if Barack Obama has decided, it's not to be universally shared, we'll just farm it out. That is a George Bush, Dick Cheney idea. That is a corporate America idea. That is an extreme American right-wing idea. So I find out Barack Obama feels that way, and then I see a commercial by Hillary Clinton that is based on utter, absolute night terror. When your children go to bed tonight, do you know what's going to happen? The terrorists are going to come. And the phone in the White House is going to ring. Who do you want answering the phone? Cringe! Hide! Shiver and shake! They are coming! They're coming! I'll protect you! Son of a bitch. It's another George Bush dictum. Well, I think most of us understand, don't we? I mean, come on now! Come on now! Get real! Let your guard down! Come on! Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are essentially exactly the same. Come on now, come on. Neither is quite as bad as these Republican Frankensteins, but come on. Go into this with your eyes wide open, folks, not your eyes wide closed. Okay?
Prime Minister and I discussed the humanitarian needs. We understand the fright that can come when you're worried about a rocket landing on top of your home.
Oh, shut up. Although that might be something that Prince Harry could deliver to this piece of human waste, Matt Drudge, you think? Okay, you know, I've been trying all week to get to this Cuba thing. I guess we're going to have to put it off until next week, Kathy, because I do want to get to phone calls here. Just a quick email here. This is from Art in Manhattan, who wrote this last night regarding Tim Russert and MSNBC. Hi, Mike. As formidable as I think he is, Russert is only the tip of the iceberg. I used to keep MSNBC on while working, and we see how long I could tolerate it as background noise. Lately, it usually doesn't last more than a few minutes. On this cable channel last week, one of the male news models interviewed Armstrong Williams on the New York Times McCain lobbyist story. He, Armstrong Williams, why are they interviewing him, railed about the decline of journalistic ethics. Armstrong Williams, the one that was paid. Oh, never mind. Art goes on, Pinhead Joe Scarborough this morning once again trashed liberals for their position on the war, etc., and yet they allowed him to handle the post-press conference conversation. On and on it goes with the Tuckers and the Matthews and the fast-talking cuties who deliver all the important news of the day, and the network touts all these losers as being part of the best news organization in the business. I wonder, Art writes, if there's a way out of this mess. We can't trust the newspapers. We can't trust TV news. Without wanting to sound too paranoid, what will we do if and when the websites are pulled down for being inflammatory and anti-government? I gather that some countries, China for one, not only have that ability, but engage in that practice. So I ask you, when I can't pick up Nova M on the internet or TPM or Crooks and Liars or FDL, etc., etc., the only places left to deal with truth, what will be our alternative to keep dissent from being extinguished? Art in Manhattan. I don't know. But thanks for writing. Phone calls. All right. If you want to call the program now, I'm going to take some calls all the next hour. 800-989-1480 is the number. 800-989-1480. Adelaide is calling from Houston, Texas, listening on the internet. Adelaide, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike.
Hey.
Yeah, I'm a long-time listener. I probably started listening around 2004. And, you know, I'm a 29-year-old black male living in Houston, Texas. And I, of course, voted today for Obama.
Yeah, well, I voted for Obama in the Georgia primary. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, my main call is about Pastor Hagee. And it's a pretty short story. Kind of all started with my mom. She's a very devout Christian, and she's religious and stuff, and tries to keep both myself and the rest of the family, you know, in the religious realm.
But your mother thinks that Hagee is really a voice of a man of God.
No, she traveled to San Antonio. My brother lives in San Antonio, so we traveled out to San Antonio. A friend of hers recommended a church to her.
I see.
And she had no clue which church it was, so we all went as a family going to visit and say, oh, well, I heard great things about it, so we'll go.
Right.
So I knew of Pastor Hagee. I've watched him. I've seen his show on TV on Channel 14 here in Houston, and I was like, you know, I'm like, this guy's a loon.
She
locked up in a rubber room. And I had no clue where his church was or where we were going. I was like, okay, I'll go to watch whatever church you want, just to, you know, entertain the idea.
Right.
And when we go, you talk about, you know, when Chris Matthews had that crawl in his leg, I literally probably had, like,
right,
maggots all over my body. I couldn't touch the books. I was like, oh, my God, I'm here in the devil's den. And, you know, it's just one of those shocking moments. It's like, this is what happens when you're not aware of the very details as far as where these people exist.
I hear you, but I'd be more interested. What did your mom think?
Oh, she was pretty much throughout the entire service. She probably clapped once.
So she was a little put off by him too.
She was very shocked because throughout the entire trip she was talking to my brother and I and saying, oh, you guys should go back to church and get back to God and stuff. And then, you know, she goes there and has that experience where he's all talking about the four horsemen killing the Muslims and all this stuff. And she was like, oh, my God, what have I done to my sons? What have I done to my family? What, you know, so it was her first experience,
mm-hmm.
you know, because she goes to Joel Osteen's church here in Houston.
Oh, Joel Osteen. Yeah, I see him occasionally on television here in Atlanta.
Yeah, and he, you know, he's a decent guy. He's not even in a way where, you know, he's willing to allow people like our Texas governor to come in and entertain him as well. But it's just, you know, his church is more inviting throughout every culture, everybody and stuff like that. But then you come to Pastor Hagee, it's just like, mm-hmm. you're a Muslim, you better not show your face.
Well, and the only reason he hangs out with people in the Middle East, the only reason he supports the Jews is because he sees them as an instrument of death.
Oh, yeah.
As a way of bringing on Armageddon. This is a sick man. And so many of these fundamentalist preachers are just absolutely sick in the head. Adelaide, I've got to leave it there, man. We have to break. Listen, call again, will you?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, I'd love to hear from you again. And thanks for calling in this time. We don't get that many calls from Houston, so it's good to hear from you. Take care. We have a break here. We'll come back. Phone calls for the rest of the program, 800-989-1480. And keep it on the topics we've been talking about tonight. You know, don't call me up and tell me, you know, you want to talk about how everything's gone to hell since we went off the gold standard. Okay, really, don't do that to me. Let's talk about what we've been talking about. He whined. Stay with us. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program on the Nova M Radio Network. Let us go to, as promised, the phone call. What? There's an open line? Well, then let's just go home, Kathy, and forget about it. The number here is 800-989-1480. Let's start with Joe in San Diego, who is listening on XM. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
I finally made it back to the big time.
Who, me or you?
Wait, me.
Oh, okay.
I've been waiting for 3 days to get on.
I'm sorry.
Brother Malloy.
I'm sorry.
I just wanted to call you to tell you that I don't think Obama and Hillary Clinton are going to do anything if either one of them get into office.
What do you mean?
They'll just sit on their hands, and they won't overturn anything like the Military Commission, or try to, Military Commissions Act. They won't try to do anything about the FISA law, try to get that back in action. They're just going to phase out. They're not going to do anything about the voting machines. It's just going to be the same thing all over again.
You know, I think I mentioned that the other night. When the next chief executive comes into office, and I said it rather cynically, not rather cynically, totally cynically, I'm sure that President Obama or President Clinton is going to immediately rescind all this horrible stuff, these assaults on the Constitution engineered by the Bush crime family. But, you know, I was saying it cynically because I people don't give up power willingly, do they?
I don't know, because if you start hearing things like liquid coal, Obama is... was trying back in the summer, was trying to get together with Dick Gephardt or something about liquid coal. And he's got a lot of no votes recently. He doesn't vote much anymore. She voted for the Military Commissions Act. I couldn't vote for anybody like those two. I'm sorry, Mike. I just can't vote for either one.
Oh, you don't have to apologize to me. Oh, my God. You know, here's the bottom line, and I think most of us who are real Democrats or real liberals or real progressives, I think we understand this. Here's the bottom line. If the 30 million or so Americans who are truly interested in progressive democratic politics, in moving this country forward finally, after what we've gone through for the past 40 years, there is no question in my mind. I know he's an egomaniac. I know he's an old man. But what we would do is walk into the voting booth on Election Day and vote for
Ralph Nader.
There you go.
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
Yeah, but we're not going to do that. I mean, we're just not going to do that. But for a number of reasons, none of which make a whole lot of sense to me, the people who are going to vote for Hillary, or the people who are going to vote for Obama, if that's the case, and I, sadly, am in that group, I don't know what the hell we're doing. I guess what we're doing is voting out of fear. We're afraid that if we really vote for the person who espouses democratic, liberal, progressive points of view and policies, and that would be Ralph Nader, if we do that, we're throwing our vote in the toilet. And to a certain extent, that is true. Unless 30 million of us would cast that vote, or 100 million, whatever the hell the number would be. I forget, and please don't email me anybody about how many votes were cast in the 2000 or 2004 presidential election. I really don't care. I'm just trying to make the point that if real Democrats, real liberals, real progressives, people who are fed up with, I mean, just fed up to the point of hysterics with the Republicans, but fed up to the point of not wanting to be tricked again by the National Democrats, if we just turned away and voted for, it just so happens to be Ralph Nader. I don't know if he would make a good president, but I don't know if Barack Obama's going to, and I don't know if Hillary Clinton's going to, but Nader is the one who has the platform. And I've said this before, all people have to do is go to his website. Look at what he talks about. Look at what he says he believes in and that he would put forward as his platform, his programs, his ideas. And you sit there and you scratch your head and go, well, damn, this is pretty progressive. But how many people are going to vote for him?
He's for the environment. He's against these wicked Republican voting machines.
He's against war. He's pro single-payer health care. It just goes on and on. All the stuff that we Democrats like to pretend is going to happen when we elect either Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton.
And he doesn't look like he'd be like John Conyers writes a book about the Constitution in crisis, about Bush and everything, and how, what he's got against him and how he could impeach him. And then when push comes to shove, goodbye, everybody.
Yeah, right. So I'm going to go in and commit an act of treason once again next election day. I'm going to vote against the Constitution of the United States. Well, I think I am. You know, that's still 6, 7, 8 months away. Maybe this time I won't. But an act against the Constitution of the United States, an act against the rule of law, an act against my country is an act of treason, no matter how it occurs. And if I vote to put in office someone who will defile the Constitution, someone whose policies are clear, as are the policies of these two Democratic candidates, then I am committing my own little personal act of treason. And I'll either have to live with it or not do it.
I don't know. It's a tough decision to make.
I'm sick of those kinds of decisions.
Look at Feinstein. You were talking about Schumer.
Yeah.
He's another one that wanted Mukasey.
He's the one that suggested him. He's the one that brought him forward and said to the Bush crime family, here, nominate this guy, and we'll get him in. And Bush said, okay, hell yeah. So it's the Democrats that gave us Mukasey. It wasn't Bush. It was the Democrats who gave us Mukasey.
Time and time again.
Oh, my God. All right, thanks.
Thanks,
Joe.
Thanks.
Appreciate you checking in, pal. My little personal act of treason. Oh, my God. I never thought of it that way until tonight, Kathy. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. Is Nader going to be on the ballot here? Do you know? He's not going to be? When we're not allowed write-ins because it's all touchscreen, right? We don't have write-ins here anymore. It's illegal.
So you can just join all the other Naderites who will be in the voting booth with you. Just scream his name. Because that's what all you people have to do. You'll just have to go in there and yell, Ralph Nader, Ralph Nader, Ralph Nader.
I know. And yes, he pisses me off. He really does. Yes, he's got a crushingly self-important view of himself. I understand. Yeah, but does McCain have any less? Does Clinton have any less? Does Obama have any less? Okay, 76 years old. Well, at the end of his first term, he'd only be 80. I just wish that over the years that Ralph Nader has been screaming about what he's been screaming about, I just wish he would have organized, really organized, if he would have done the the Saul Walensky thing. If he would have just organized, if he just, but he didn't. And I think who is it at the Nation? I don't have the copy in front of me, but the Nation is going after him again. You know, like, ah, for Christ's sake, Ralph, not you again. You know, that kind of attitude. One of the writers for the Nation. I don't mean the Nation editorially. I mean one of their writers. I don't know who it is because I've got the issue someplace else. But it's just so it's just so frustrating to know that you're committing treason against your own country. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. This is Nova M Radio.
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
21 past the hour. What I'm laughing about, somebody just sent me a link to a Salon.com article written by Joe Connison, whose writings I really respect. We've had Connison on before back in the day when we used to do Guest, which we very seldom do anymore. But this is Dateline Today. Listen, just a few sentences. Irritated Democrats and everyone else who feels that we have heard more than enough from Ralph Nader cannot help wondering why he would be running for president yet again at the risk of becoming a permanent national joke. Is he stroking his own ego, as some critics complain? Is he motivated by principle to offer voters a different choice, as he will insist? Both those explanations may still be plausible, although between 2000 and 2004, his support fell from 3% to 0.3%, which is not exactly an ego boost nor an endorsement of third-party politics. Even in 2000, when he made his strongest and most disastrous showing, he fell far short of his own 5% target. But the evidence suggests another possible motive for Nader to run this year, namely, drum roll, that he hopes to help his longtime ally, John McCain, to whom he owes at least one big favor. Nader is already focusing his fire on the Democrats, with his website featuring dozens of press releases attacking Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, while none voice the slightest criticism of McCain. In his latest round of television appearances, Nader trained his fire directly on Obama. Nader's proclivity to boost Republicans and blast Democrats has been a matter of historical record ever since the Florida debacle 8 years ago, when his 97,000 votes probably deprived Al Gore of victory in that crucial state. Let me see. What else here? McCain. No, wait a minute. But as New York Times reported on September 17, 2004, there was a political backstory behind McCain's assistance to Nader. According to the Times, Trevor Potter, a prominent attorney and former Federal Election Commission member, said that the Nader campaign first sought Mr. McCain's backing in the case last week and that subsequently the Bush campaign also asked him to get involved. Yadda, 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 yadda. The Naderite connections with McCain go back many years to an era when the Arizona senator displayed a real maverick tendencies in jousting with corporate interests in the tobacco, telecommunications, and automobile lobbies, as well as his strong support for campaign finance reform. Nostalgia for the old McCain may explain why Joan Claybrook, who directs the Nader-founded public citizen organization, stepped forward to defend McCain against the Times' expose of his relationship with lobbyist Vicky Eisenman. Nader may occasionally tweak McCain over the war in Iraq or the Canadian healthcare system, but they both know that that won't matter. Watch while Nader blisters Obama or Clinton and McCain smiles. Wait to see whether McCain tries to insist that Nader, whose support is minuscule and shrinking, deserves to appear on the debate dais with him and the Democrat. Look for Republicans to prop up Nader with ballot signatures and campaign cash. And remember that this time Nader's candidacy, having descended from tragedy to farce, may simply be an inside joke. Nader and McCain. Why, sure. It all comes clear now, doesn't it, Kathy? Eh, it's clear as mud. Nader and McCain. Natural born allies. Oh, you want me to say natural-born killers? All right. Yeah, you can make the argument that the reason Ralph Nader pops up every 4 years is because he hates Democrats. He could never really capture the heart or the soul of the Democratic Party and run as a Democrat. They wouldn't let him. So that Nader's goal for the past couple, three elections has been to do as much damage to the party that snubbed him oh so long ago, and the outcome be damned, because Nader is hip to the reality that there is no difference between Democrats and Republicans except where it concerns war and death and destruction and health care and regulatory agencies. There is a lot of difference between Democrats and Republicans. There really is. I mean, come on. But Nader, you can make the argument that Nader is so pissed off that every 4 years, on a quadrennial basis, Nader rises up out of his coffin. Someone pulls the stake out of his heart, removes the silver bullets from his brain, and he stalks the political landscape, putting out there all the right points of view where it concerns the Democratic Party that snubbed him all those years ago, and then siphons off votes from the Democratic Party. So, is it madness enough for you yet? Huh, Truth Seeker? Not you Republicans, screw you. Democrats, is it complex? Is it woven to a degree yet where you can't find your way to the exits? It damn sure is for me, honestly. Well, we can't turn back. Let's lose the guns and let's lose the bombs. We'll stop the corporate contributions that they'll build upon. Well, I'll be sleeping on your stage until I start to snore. Because I won't carry gold for an oil war. A salam, or a lecker, or a lecker salam. Peace to the Middle East, peace to Islam. Now, don't get us wrong, because we love America. But that's no reason to get hysterical. The laying on the syrup.
A woman, Johnny wants to think of a joke. I regret, I have to tell you right in war. I never wanted to be a war president.
I'm afraid of a man. Oh, come on, you love it. You get to dance on the deck of an aircraft carrier. You get to make great big decisions involving life and death.
Send the troops there. Send them over there. Bring them over here. Ready, aim, fire.
You lying son of a bitch. You love every minute of it. Ah, blood, death, destruction. Oops. Back to your phone calls. CC is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Hi, CC.
Hey, what's up, Mike?
You are.
Listen, I love your show, man. I got lots of respect for you. I was wondering on this Obama Blackwater thing here. That's I'm glad you brought that up, man, because I was totally unaware of that situation. You know, me being the Obama supporter, you know, I want to know everything about the guy.
Right, right.
Which is why I'm also going to pick your brain here about that. But let me get to my point, or my question, actually. Were you implying that just because Obama's trying to use these Blackwater mercenaries, that he would be using them specifically for murder and chaos and mayhem?
The quick answer is yeah. I mean, look what they've done. Look what the Blackwater. Yeah,
you're
the black.
About
what?
Under,
what?
You're talking about under Bush, though.
No. Wait a second. Blackwater mercenaries only answer to Blackwater corporate executives. They don't answer
absolutely
to Bush. Yeah,
absolutely.
They have nothing to do with the Bush.
Right.
And they had and
well, I don't know. I would
wait a minute. Wait a second. Let me finish. Mm-hmm. They have nothing to answer to Bush about. They have nothing to answer to a President Hillary Clinton or a President Barack
agreed
Obama.
Agreed.
All right.
But didn't he first say that he would need to make these people accountable? Right.
But you can't do that. That's an impossibility. They're operating. Now listen to me, mm-hmm, Cece. They're operating in foreign countries that have laws of their own. The United States cannot go into a foreign country and impose laws that are applicable here in a foreign country. That's A. Here's B. The Uniform Code of Military Justice only applies to people who are in the United States military. Now, the bottom line, Blackwater or Triple Canopy or DynCorp, any of these mercenaries, these hired paid killers, they answer only to their corporate employer. There is nothing that Barack Obama or the United States Senate or the U.S. House, there's no way to do this. You can't go into another country and pass a law that says this group of armed mercenaries is subject to the same laws applicable in the United States. Do you understand my point?
Absolutely, Mike.
All right. There's nothing Barack Obama can do.
I understood all of that, but here's where I think you're wrong, okay? What Blackwater is, because they're mercenaries, they are a money-driven business, are they not?
Right.
Okay, so somebody has to pay them for these services, isn't
right
it?
Right.
Okay, so who is going to pay them for these services if we don't have this right-wing, evangelical, crazy lunatic George Bush in office doing that?
According to Barack Obama, his administration. Didn't you hear what I said?
What I read from the Nation.
No, wait. Let me finish. You asked a question. Let me answer. From the Nation article. Now, they don't quote Barack Obama. They quote his advisors. And he said, the advisor said specifically and with no qualifications that Barack Obama will use these mercenaries. So if your question is who's going to pay them, it would be at the insistence of the Obama administration. Now, the House, the U.S. House that controls the purse strings of any administration, if they decide not to provide the money to the State Department, that in turn uses the money the State Department uses to pay these people, well, maybe they can figure out a way to do that, but that's not Barack Obama. That's not Hillary Clinton. That is the U.S. Congress. And so far, that hasn't happened. Cece?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Well, does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely. And here's what I'm saying, Mike, to put it shortly, because I wanted you to say, yeah, it was the Obama campaign who has to pay them, obviously. But here's what the Obama
No. The Obama campaign doesn't pay anybody. No administration pays anybody. The United States House of Representatives decides on who's going to be paid what in the budget, okay?
Wait, if we don't approve of what they're doing with their actions, we can choose not to pay them. Isn't that correct?
No, it's not correct. CeCe, I got to move on because I feel like I'm just chasing my own tail here. You have an idea that I don't know how to answer it. George W. Bush or Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or Bill Clinton or Ronald Reagan or whoever the president is, they don't pay anybody. The way getting paid operates in this country is the president submits a proposed budget, what he would like to see spent. It is up to the U.S. House of Representatives to decide what really is going to be spent. And then the House passes the budget back to the president. And the president can either accept it or veto it. There is no Obama or Clinton or McCain who decides who's going to be paid. All right? That's not the way it works. Come on, CeCe. Jim is calling from where in Canada, Jim?
Castaic, California, possibly.
Oh, I'm sorry. Castaic, California. I'm sorry. My bad. I looked at that and I thought, oh, that's Canada. Obviously, it's not. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Excellent. I actually was going to talk about this Hillary ad.
Okay.
And I think it's a huge mistake that she's made because anybody who's lived through the last 7 years of this president with the various fear tactics that they've been...
We're tired of it.
We're tired of it. And it was a slap in the face. When I saw that, I thought, this is a desperate, desperate woman. And I think it's going to backfire. I hope it's going to backfire.
I think the ad is disgusting. In the first place, it's absolutely... I mean, that's not how it works. If Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama or Ronald Reagan or whomever gets a phone call in the middle of the night, there's not a goddamn thing they can do about it. It doesn't make any difference what is being said on the phone call if they are going to follow the Constitution. If the phone call says, oh, guess what? We're being attacked. Well, then the President of the United States, the next morning, has to call a session of Congress and ask for a declaration of war. So you're absolutely right. This commercial, this political ad run by Hillary, is nothing but strictly an ad filled with fear and loathing. And you're right. I've had enough of it.
It's closet racist. It's just awful.
It's
and
terrible.
I can't imagine, and you see these people come on to CNN or MSNBC, and you can see where their allegiance lies immediately. And they're Democrats, but it doesn't seem to matter to them. They don't care anymore.
Who is this you're referring to? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I just saw people today get on to Hardball or whatever, and they all just start saying, oh, well, I don't see this being racist, and we don't see this as being a problem, and we're just, she's just trying to say that she's more experienced. It's obviously not the case.
Well, I don't see the racist part. Where's the racist part?
I see the part that you've got, and this may be me, but I see it as basically you've got this white woman waking up in the middle of the night at 3 o'clock in the morning saying, it's a phone call.
Right, and it's important who gets the phone call. I don't see any racism there. I see it as a fear-mongering, false a political ad, which translates, it's just politics as usual. But I don't see the racism there, Jim. I really don't.
Fair enough. I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
I would say that I think she's lost it. I really do. She thinks that the Democrats who've lived with this sort of tactic for 7 years are going to deal with her.
I think you're right. I think you're right there. I think enough Democrats are going to look at that and just have to suppress a gag reflex. And I think we're going to know an awful lot come next Tuesday. I really do. Jim, thanks, man. I appreciate it. I hope you call again. Take care. We'll break here and come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Stay with us.
enough is enough is enough is enough. Open your eyes, time to wake up. Enough is enough is enough.
About 10 before the hour, thanks to the crew who produced the program tonight and all week, Ian Huff at our flagship station in Phoenix, KPHX, who engineered and answered your programs, answered your calls, blah, 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 blah. Billy Foster, our technical director, Ben Birch, who is our podcast manager, Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, our resident philosopher, Bob Alexander, and our writer-in-residence, Bridget Wolf. The executive producer of this program is Catherine Day. Bob is calling from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mr. Malloy. I'm a lifelong Democrat. My first vote was for Adlai Stevenson against Dwight Eisenhower. I agree with 96 to 98% of what you say. And I listen to your show four nights a week, but I wouldn't want you to be angry with me, but I'd like to offer another point of view on one thing you said tonight.
Okay.
You'll probably say I'm a dreamer before I get through, but I'd like to talk about Nancy Pelosi.
You're a dreamer.
And, John Conyers. And
okay.
I think what you said up to this point about the Democratic Congress dragging its feet since 2006 is absolutely true. When she shut the door on impeachment of Bush, it was a bad thing to do.
Uh-huh.
I also believe that Karl Rove is George Bush's backroom fixer and that he's a master of dirty tricks and that the man is above the law right now because he ought to be in jail. What I want to suggest is that this time maybe Nancy Pelosi and John Conyers are on the right road because the civil suit, maybe, I'm not saying it's going to happen,
mm-hmm.
will end up in the Supreme Court,
mm-hmm.
and maybe the Supreme Court will rule so that Harriet Myers and Josh Bolten have to come in there and talk to Conyers. And that being the case, they'll get to the bottom of caging. Caging has already been brought up.
Mm-hmm.
Caging primarily was done by Karl Rove in Ohio, all over the country, in Florida. The voters were disenfranchised in 2000 and in Ohio in 2004. And in 2004, Kerry would have won that state and won the election.
Mm-hmm.
So I say this is the first step, that this time they're taking the first step towards possibly, not exactly, toward possibly getting to the bottom of the caging and getting Karl Rove, some justice with Karl Rove. I'm also very angry about what my wife and I saw on Sunday about Governor Siegelman in Alabama.
Isn't that awful?
Being imprisoned and Karl Rove pulling some dirty tricks
okay,
on him with
well,
the Republican lawyer.
Okay, if I can just interrupt for a second, Bob. The action that Nancy Pelosi took today has absolutely nothing, you understand this, I'm sure, nothing to do with Karl Rove. Nothing. In terms of holding him accountable. It has to do with Harriet Myers and Josh Bolten. Karl Rove exists in a dimension beyond the reach of people like you, me, Nancy Pelosi, the cops, the military, a hitman. He exists in a parallel universe. He is apparently untouchable. As far as the case in Alabama of jailing as a political prisoner, a former governor, sure, that's Karl Rove's operation, but nobody is suggesting that somebody issue a warrant or a subpoena for Karl Rove. Karl Rove is protected. He's protected by the Democratic Party leadership, the Republican Party leadership, the Bush crime family, the United States Supreme Court, and the entire U.S. Senate. Make an argument for me. Otherwise, I'd like to hear it. If Karl Rove is not protected, why has this filthy pig not been brought before the bar of justice somewhere? Right?
I have one, sir. I have an argument.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. The question of caging has already come up in the firing, the Republican, political firings of the Republican federal prosecutors.
Oh.
One of the senior women came to the Judiciary Committee and said that a certain person was involved in the caging, and you know what I'm talking about with the caging.
Right.
I'm saying that the discussing of the federal prosecutors, Myers and Bolton bringing information to the Judiciary Committee,
uh-huh,
is the tip of the iceberg that's going to lead to caging being uncovered so that Rove.
Okay,
and,
Bob, let me just say, I understand what you're saying, and I agree with you, but you understand that this threat today by Nancy Pelosi to bring charges, civil charges, against against these two, they can't force them to testify. So the fact that these two, Bolton and Myers, have information about all this, I don't disagree with you. But there is still a Fifth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, even though the Bush crime family would like to remove that and set it on fire unless it applies to their people. And it applies to their people in this instance. There is no way on earth to force Myers or, well, there's no way in the United States to force Myers or Bolton to testify against themselves. So
okay,
while I understand what you're saying, and I agree essentially with what you're saying, please understand that Bolton and Myers will never provide testimony, and they cannot be forced to provide testimony that will indict this corrupt administration about anything. Caging, fraud, deceit, lies, it can't be done. But I hear what you're saying, Bob. I hear what you're saying. I got to leave it there, pal. Thanks for checking in. Oh, why do I feel so exhausted? Who in the hell am I going to vote for? Who are you going to vote for, Kathy? Thanks for
Nader!
Thanks for participating this week. I do appreciate it. Take care. I'll see you Monday. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Oh, yeah. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.